Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining today. I'm very excited about the opportunity to have this panel. I think today, discussing bringing long-haul flights to your airport, we have a very good panel and different point of views. We have two people from two major hubs and one person who is running an airline. And then we have the marketing director for Airbus, who have a lot of exciting news lately on a new type of aircraft that would enable a lot of long-haul routes that might be nicher than what they used to be in the past. But with that, please let me introduce to each one of the panelists today. I would like to introduce you to Frank Diaz. He's a Chief Executive Officer for Skyscanner. We have Veronica Paddock. She's the Marketing Director for Airbus. We have Joao Pita, Chief Commercial Officer and Cargo Officer for Sao Paulo Airport, Guarulhos. And we have Majid Khan, Vice President Aviation Development for IGA Istanbul Airport. Okay, so let's begin this session. I think with the first question, and this would be for the two airport representative here, what are the factors and considerations should airports take into account when deciding to pitch a long-haul flight?
Great, I can start. Yeah, there are obviously many factors. I would say, first of all, the airport should know its customers. It's not about one size fits all any longer. I mean, we know if you look a bit more than a decade back, most of the airports perceive themselves as infrastructure providers. Nice terminal, couple of runways. But the thing is, you need to understand each airline's business model. It's really important, of course. Incentives are important. But first of all, define the market, because airline doesn't fly to an airport. They fly to a market. And obviously after that, incentive is important. How you can help the airlines to decrease the total cost of operation. Because it's easy, I would say, to get the airline, but it's difficult to sustain the airline. So you need to look on, okay, is this an airline which doesn't cannibalize my existing traffic? It's an airline which can stimulate my market. I mean, I've seen in my life a couple of examples where you manage to get the airline in by giving them nice incentive, nice marketing package, but if they pull out, you are literally on the bottom of the list. So it's really important to understand your customers. Don't tell what you have, but put yourself into the foot of the airline, actually.
Joe?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for the invitation to be here. I think just to add one or two things. What I try to do and my team tries to do is that we try to think as an airline with, of course, limited resources and not the same tools. But, you know, if we were an airline, would you put the asset on my airport? If the answer is yes, then let's continue. If the answer is no, then go to another business case. So we need to have the local demand. I think the question about cannibalization is very important. So let's say that we have 6 daily Lisbon flights. So are we able to get a 7th? Maybe yes. It depends on the carrier and what the carrier will do on São Paulo and in Lisbon. So I think to think about the local demand, the connectivity, it's not only a flight. It's a flight at a given time that will provide you a given connectivity. So if I don't have enough slots at a certain hour, some routes might be unprofitable. So yes, I might have some business case for route X, Y, and Z, but if I cannot arrive at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. in São Paulo, or I cannot arrive at 2200 or at 1 a.m. at the other end of the route, then there is not the route is not sustainable. So I think all of these details the airports currently need to take care of. It's not only to present I have 100 passengers a day and that can fulfill 60% of the flight. It's what time, what aircraft, what connectivity, and of course, adding up on that, currently more and more important, the cargo and the revenue that the airlines can take from the cargo loads as well.
Very good. And I would like now to hear from the airline perspective. What are the factors you want to see an airport or destination to have in order to start the conversation?
Well, basically, at the airline perspective, you have to see the business model that is a part of the what the airline want to build. Then you go to the airport and see facilities and customs and immigration facilities in terms to perform a good service, a good passenger experience, and so on, some incentive in part of the government or tourist board, and also the airport. And from that point, we need collaboration with the airport to receive data and so on. You can make decisions.
Very good. Now, when we think of long-haul markets, we think of the Europe to the US, we think of Caribbean to Europe, we think North and South America. But in reality, there are new airlines and routes being added that are not necessarily that type of long-haul, but rather overflying some major US hub, for example, particularly from the US to the Caribbean. Can you please, Veronica, give us more detail on this type of new long-haul? And why this is a new phenomenon?
So, as Nicholas was saying, then we often think of long haul as flying, say, between different regions over great oceans. But in reality, there's also long haul markets within a region. So, for example, transcontinental US, that's a long haul market. We can also think of from the Caribbean to the US West Coast or down to the lower part of Latin America as also being long haul markets. So today in operation, we have aircraft such as the A220 and the A321 XLR, which are single aisle aircraft that have the range capability to operate on routes. So you mentioned Breeze. Breeze is a relative newcomer in the US market, and they're operating A220s, and they are operating them on transcontinental routes, and they are using the capability of the long range, but also the fact that it has a lower capacity aircraft and is able to operate at attractive economics. So recently they've opened their longest routes, which is Providence in the northeast of the country to Los Angeles. And these are flights which are 5 to 5.5 hours sector time. So these are long routes. And it's the aircraft technology is enabling them to operate these routes, which have lower demand. We are also having the A321 XLR, which will come into service, and that will increase the range capability of single aisle aircraft. And this will be at low operating cost, but with able to operate the longer distances. And the kind of routes that this will open up, it would be, for example, between the Caribbean and the west coast of the US. And what at the moment, you know, there's many flights between, say, Cancun, Caribbean, up towards Florida and the Northeast. And the West Coast is actually missing that kind of connectivity to the region. And when we think about leisure passengers in particular, how do you decide where it is that you go on holiday? One of the key factors is a non-stop flight with a relatively low fare. If your vacation is, I really want to go to a beautiful beach resort where I can enjoy some sunshine, maybe some cocktails, then there's many destinations that offer a similar type of experience. And it's the availability of a non-stop flight at a low fare that can make the difference there. But I should also add that part of the technology as well that we have is the cabin comfort. So the cabin comfort is suitable for operating these long-haul flights. And we're able to have some premium seats that offer high levels of comfort that is passengers will enjoy over the longer flights as well.
Very good and very interesting. I would love to hear on this point the views of an airport, because I think the as Veronica mentioned, the A220s is opening up a lot of opportunities. The XLR will open up some really good opportunities. How do you handle from the airport perspective when you see these opportunities that clearly the A220 would be a fantastic airplane to operate that route? At the same time, an airport like Sao Paulo, very congested, very constrained for in terms of slot, ultimately is going to be taken in lieu of potentially a 777. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, we are not as congested as you are suggesting. So,
pardon.
You hope
that was not on the script. Huh?
Insert it. It was not on the script. On certain times of day, perhaps.
No. But the question is very good. I think there are markets that are different. So, for instance, if you say Miami or Lisbon. Of course, 777s, 300, A330s, NEOs, A350s, you know, we can sustain that. But let's think differently. Let's think how can we connect the south part of Africa, not only South Africa, with the US and Canada. We can do Cape Town, Joburg, Luanda, Maputo, and other places to São Paulo and connect north. How can people go to Cancun or to Mexico or to Florida or New York from those places? So I think we are in an ideal position. So we have studied the South African market for a while now, and most of the people connect actually via Europe to go to New York. They could save five, six hours if they could connect to São Paulo. But we might not be able to sustain a Maputo route in the beginning with a wide body. But we could do it with a single aisle. Funny enough, the same applies to the Caribbean. We have for sure in South America the largest demand generator in São Paulo. Economically speaking, population-wise, in terms of number of tourists that we can export, but we have only two gateways in the Caribbean, Punta Cana and Panama. So we don't have more. We have 250 passengers a day from the city of São Paulo to Cancun every day, one direction, and we don't have a direct service because we cannot sustain it with a wide body, but we can sustain easily with a narrow body. So I think when we talk about hubs and we talk about global hubs as São Paulo and, of course, Istanbul and others, we talk about different layers of connections and different layers of markets. And what the A321LRs, A320s can bring to the market is second level or increasing frequencies. But basically, I would say more on number one ranking for us is new markets, maybe Tampa, maybe other places in the US, Philadelphia, Charlotte, Denver in the winter. So we can open up much more markets and give Veronica was saying is that the comfort of a non-stop, and people want to pay for that because they reduce the travel time significantly. And we know that in the 21st century, what we have of more precious is our time.
Very good. Majid, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I agree with what you're always saying, but obviously all markets are different. From Istanbul's side, as we say, we are, as Napoleon said, I mean, if the world was one country, Istanbul would be its capital. So we have an amazing geographical location between east and west and north and south. From Istanbul, I mean, within 3 hours with the narrow body, you can cover entire Europe, entire Middle East, CIS, half of Africa. But obviously LRs and XLRs, I mean, that they give additional opportunities. But I would say for a market like us, first of all, we are very lucky that we got a brand new greenfield airport. We have a capacity to accommodate 90 million passengers. That's only the first phase of the construction. And when all phases are completed, we will be able to accommodate 200 million passengers yearly. So capacity-wise, we don't have any issues. So obviously, we are talking about, and we are still already now, we are in the team developing a lot of analysis to see which markets could be next one for us. We have a great European network with 100 destinations. We have 54 in Africa. But I would say for LRs and XLRs, for our market, it's directly connected to the regional aircrafts as well. Because if we need to develop, let's say, direct connectivity with LRs and XLRs to CIS, to Asia, secondary cities in, for instance, subcontinent, then we have other issues. That's the bilateral part. That's a completely different topic. Africa, the next thing for us is secondary cities in Africa, which are not viable with the wide body. But we know our existing network out of Europe is already, the aircrafts are jam-packed. I mean, Istanbul is pretty much a full-year market. But we have actually defined approximately 73 destinations in Europe, which are still unserved, but that they will not be viable with the 320. They need maybe A220s or E-jets. So obviously for our market, XLR, LRs are actually connected directly to potentially the regional fleet as well.
Very good, very interesting. And this is a question for you, Frank. What strategies can airports use to market themselves as attractive destination for long-haul flights, and how can they differentiate themselves from other airports?
Well, basically, in the part of the airport, airports are the ones who have to answer this question, not the airline. But basically the airline figure out and try to find is to bring the best passenger experience when you decide to operate a long-haul flights. As I mentioned in the past, you know, that the passenger can find all the comfort in that station, and as Yao mentioned, to have the airport that have all additional connectivity with other airport in the region, you know, making the switch between the long haul flight with the final mile or the final destination to the passenger.
Anything to add, you two? Airport, from the airport perspective, how can you differentiate?
I'm not sure if it's how can São Paulo differentiate, but I think is we need to understand the bias of the route, right? Where is the route going to and coming from? I think this is important. So when we say, for instance, Córdoba to São Paulo or Mendoza, this is a São Paulo outbound market. Right, I think the airport changes its perspective according to what the route details are. So what is inside those passengers? What passengers are? So let's say that we launch a São Paulo Cancun. Most likely the point of sale will be 80-85% São Paulo. So the ones that will benefit economically from the route in terms of job creation, economic activity, will be mostly Cancun. So I am, you know, the provider of the passengers in terms of I have the population there. But Cancun has what our population wants. But it can be vice versa if it's a Luanda flight, because people come to São Paulo to go to the hospitals and to study and to shop. So then the provider is Luanda, and I'm the one receiving the benefit, direct benefit of this. So I think just to sum up this, we are in the industry of tourism, right, both for business and for leisure. And we are in a global competition. I compete with the Middle East and Southeast Asia as Istanbul. But the economic effect is local, is jobs created in São Paulo, is economic activity in the restaurants in Istanbul. The activity is here, but the competition is global and we cannot see who are our competitors. And I think the government and the tourism authorities need to understand this. This is an invisible competition, but it's there.
I can comment on that as well. Obviously, you need to look on your entire ecosystem, obviously. So it's the airport, it's your civil aviation, it's your, tourism, visit Turkey for our part. So all the relevant stakeholders. But what we have done in Istanbul Airport, we have passengers from 200 different nationalities. So obviously, we cannot focus on all 200 different nationalities. So we have... In our aviation strategy, we have actually defined into different segments. One is obviously Asia, so China, Korea, Japan. If we look on China only, we made a study actually where we could see that Generation Z will going to be the future. I mean, only in China, there are 300 million of them. So we thought, okay, I mean, we don't have many Chinese passengers at the moment because of the pandemic, but let's prepare ourselves, just to give you an example, let's prepare ourselves for a post-pandemic era. As the first airport in the world, we decided to actually develop a youth lounge where you have, first of all, you can do networking with youngsters in your own age between 15 to 30 years old while your parents are doing shopping or they're sitting in the lounge. For a limited amount of money, you have, typically we give for 1 hour free Wi-Fi, but here they were going to get 4 hour Wi-Fi. That's just one example. When we were looking westbound, we know the untouched potential for us is the cruise port, is a cruise segment from USA and Canada mainly. On that point, we are cooperating with Galata Port, which is the brand new cruise port in Istanbul, because we would like our passengers to start the journey and the journey out of Istanbul instead of having a short stopover, which doesn't benefit us, as an airport. Furthermore, we have currently 89 airlines. We increased from 65 to 89 during the last 3 years. 75% of the traffic is driven by Turkish Airlines and remaining by the foreign carriers. But all those foreign carriers who are actually non-star, they fly into a dead end when they fly into Istanbul Airport. So we made an agreement with Trip.com, the largest OTA in Asia, for the virtual interline. It was for two reasons. One was virtual interline, that first of all, that passengers could connect from anywhere to anywhere via Istanbul. That's number one. Secondly, as I mentioned, China will be the next big thing because we are struggling out of Europe and also because of the Russian airspace at the moment for most of the European market. When China will gonna reopen, Generation Z is pretty important. Secondly, with the cooperation we have made with Trip.com, they will gonna promote Istanbul as a hub in China. And these are the things which will definitely gonna benefit us. And one more thing I would like to highlight that, internationalization focus. That's a project we have launched in Istanbul where we said, okay, all non-Latin languages, we should have the signages in all non-Latin languages. We have now started to hire, we have Chinese-speaking staff at Istanbul Airport. For instance, we are Chinese-friendly airport as well, where we have looked on the customer journey of the Chinese travelers and actually implemented a lot of services like Chinese signages, Chinese-speaking staff, hot water dispensers, WeChat Pay, dedicated gates. And when I say dedicated gates, you need it because we have 371 of them. So for China flights, as many of the Chinese travelers don't speak other language than Chinese, dedicated gates and dedicated check-in counters are important. So this is just one example for one nationality.
That is very interesting, Majid. And following up on something that you touched and I wanted to ask as well is cooperation with different stakeholders within the region. And I would include even something Joao mentioned about the Cancun example, where the 85% of the point of sale would be Brazil and the beneficial would be Cancun. I would like to hear, how do you guys work with the different tourism boards, both local and on the other side, as well as the hospitality industry and other partners that might be key in order to get this long-haul flight?
Yeah, I would say, of course, our own tourism board is important, but I would like to include regional airports as well. Because we have seen during the pandemic, those airports which have lost most of the traffic is actually the regional airports. I can speak from the European point of view. Either they had maybe a one or two hub connectivity, or they had a strong based low-cost carrier, which has probably moved out or decreased the capacity. So for the recovery, it will take them longer time than for the hubs because the hubs have the volume. What we have done to develop our long haul, we need more short haul, of course. Going back to the example about 73 destinations which are still underserved, last year we got in touch with 24 of the top unserved airports, invited them into Istanbul Airport, and we know that conference like Connect Routes, regional airports don't get much speaking time with the large airlines, actually. That's the fact. So we invited 24 airports into Istanbul Airport. Together with Visit Turkey, we arranged actually a regional workshop. They met all the decision makers at Turkish Airlines. And actually, it resulted in Palermo being chosen as the first, destination as a direct effect of this regional workshop. So you need to include all the relevant stakeholders, but cooperation, the key is cooperation. You need to cooperate instead of seeing as a competition. Cooperation is important.
Joe?
No, I fully agree congratulate Majid on the amazing work that you guys are doing in Istanbul. So it's a, I think is top notch, I think worldwide today. But I agree. I think cooperation, we see that a lot in Brazil and in other places, which is there are airports are not more and less important, right? They have different vocations, like the airlines. Some airlines are low cost, some others are legacy carriers, some others are more lean to cargo and some others to business. So they are not more and less important. And I think more than compete, I think we need to collaborate. And then when we go to other airports is, you know, how we can make the experience better, how we can connect better, how can the baggage system works perfectly so that passengers can trust that they can connect. And then when you go to official authorities, it's more about having enough staff. So we know worldwide the shortage of staff in terms of CBPs in the US or border controls all around the world, screening staff. So how we can make the traveling experience better. And then when we go to a different dimension, which is the tourism and the economic development, is aviation, how we can convey the message for once for all that we are a mean, right? No one, almost no one, travels to travel, right? You don't travel to fly. There are a few guys that do it, but the vast majority don't. So you fly for a reason. And when you fly to São Paulo or to Rio or to Buenos Aires, you want to go and see good things, enjoy, or go to a conference and have a nice time. So I think we need to once for all, to get those guys on board and say, you know, guys, when we bring Ethiopian daily, we are bringing 200 people a day. So you need to be your job now, which is to welcome those people and make them feel comfortable in São Paulo or wherever they go.
Very interesting. This is a question for you, Veronica. From the Airbus perspective, what do you see as the main challenges or barriers for both airports and airlines that they might face when trying to attract a long-haul flight?
So I think one of the challenges to recognize is that for an airline, they have the aircraft assets that they own is actually a very expensive asset to own, and they have a wide choice of destinations where they can potentially fly that asset. So one of the key factors will be for the airport and also the destination is to convince that it will be the most profitable way to use the aircraft asset. But I think you've already touched on that it is much more than just the number of, passengers, but also beyond what the passengers can also expect.
And very interesting. And Frank, do you have anything to add from the airline perspective? What are the main challenges you see, assuming you have the aircraft to operate the route? And
well, basically, as mentioned in the past, Veronica, when you figure out a long-haul flight, it's not think about go over oceanic flights. You can figure out and go to niche market right here in the region. When you talk about a long-haul flights, you are talking about flights more than 5 hours, 6 hours, that commonly you can figure out here in the same region. Now we have new challenge, newer aircraft that can perform. It's not only to go and think about wide-body aircraft to perform new routes. You can do and perform long-haul flights easily now with our narrow-body aircraft. But working together with the airport and the community and marketing in a good perspective, social media, you can figure out and so on.
Very interesting. And one thing that has been mentioned, I think, by you, Majid, and briefly by you, Joao, as well, And I would like to hear your perspective as well, so everyone's perspective on the, in terms of cargo. Cargo has become such an important factor these days, post-pandemic. I would like to know, how has that changed from your perspective when you, and if you are incorporating that when having the discussions with airlines regarding long-haul markets? And we can start with you, Majid, and go.
In the airline perspective, now cargo is one of the keys of success in the long-haul flights by three main reasons, probably. First of all, the increase of the e-commerce globally. The second one you can look around is the globalization of the markets. And the third one is the every day more needs about delivery on time of goods as perishables and so on. And cargo get as a primary factor when you decide to operate long-haul flights now.
Veronica?
Yeah, I feedback that I've heard from airlines is that it can be the case that on certain flights, then the belly cargo is sufficient to cover the operating costs of the flight, and then the passenger ticket sales is what's then boosting the profitability of the flight. And so when looking at services, then it's not just how many passengers are there on the flight, because often there would be also the underlying demand for a flight. So even if today there could be relatively few passengers traveling between two points, then opening the flight and having lower fares could stimulate the demand and the traffic, and you have the cargo as well to support the profitability of the service and reduce any risk.
Anything to add from the airport perspective with regard to cargo?
Well, the good of this, if you give me the word, the good of the cargo in the airline is the cargo don't pay taxes as a passenger. You know, that's the reason it's more profitable that help to operate the long-haul flights. That's in the side of the airline. Cargo is more feasible to operate it.
For us, we have a strong cargo team, as we have a lot of cargo. Not as Miami, but we do have good loads of cargo during the year. And as Frank was mentioned, but I'm not going to start with e-commerce. I think it has changed because legacy carriers, before the pandemic, we saw a difference between U.S. and European and more Middle East carriers. So typically, from São Paulo perspective, we saw a little bit more attention paid by the Europeans and the Middle East carriers about the cargo than the U.S. carriers. And I think that changed with the pandemic. So now we see everyone increase their cargo teams from the airlines, from the legacy carriers, like having cargo VPs and all of the sales teams. So they are putting more focus on cargo because, of course, the yields have increased, and they saw that if they have a good revenue management, now with all the softwares and the online tools for booking cargo and so on, they could really increase their revenue, and that is good. So they can sustain more flights, more frequency, or upgauge just because of the belly. So the second thing is about the e-commerce. You know, the long haul is very important to bring the goods from wherever they are produced. But then we need to be able to do the last mile. So what Frank does with Skycan and what other guys do in the islands in the Caribbean is to get the last mile. And that we are not going to get with the big wide bodies or the long haul narrow bodies. So we need all of these logistics in place. So again, the hub, and Majid was talking about the 200 nationalities, then the same applies with e-commerce. No, we need to receive e-commerce, break it down, and be able to serve 200 destinations or 120 destinations with those small packages delivered every day.
I mean, generally during the pandemic, we could see actually a shift in dynamics when we spoke with airline network planning teams, especially within cargo. I mean, previously, while we were chasing, full freight, but during as full freight has been doing pretty well the last couple of years, but belly cargo was the one which actually lost the capacity. Whenever we went to the network planning teams at airline headquarters, they said, focus on passenger business. Focus on passenger business to grow your belly cargo capacity, and if the routes succeed, we will gonna automatically add full freight, and that has happened for our market at least. But having said that, we have plenty of markets, especially within the VFR segment, where you cannot accommodate much cargo. CIS countries, a lot of our passengers, for instance, Tashkent flight, they come to Istanbul. Economy class, 40, 50 kilos, then you can imagine how much belly cargo capacity you have left, actually. So it's again back to all markets are different, but generally, one of the reasons our first priority is the passenger business, because we moved from an old airport, which was capacity constrained 3 years ago. Our capacity was just 35 million, and the day we moved out, we had 69 million passengers. So, and when we compare ourselves with the big hubs in Europe, plus the big three from Middle East, we had 65 carriers at that time, catchment area of 20 million people within 2 hours drive. London Heathrow, same catchment area, but they had over 100 airlines. So we have something to catch up. So that's why our main focus is now to grow the passenger business and back to the e-commerce. And of course, we have now signed agreement with FedEx, for instance, and we're going to be looking on more on the e-commerce side as well.
Interesting. And one question for you too. You have your team. You have been doing studies for potential routes, things that seem very clear for you that they should be served. And now you go to an airline and the airline tells you, I'm not there. It's not something that I see in the short term, even medium term. Is there anything that you would do differently in order to convince the airline that there is the opportunity that you clearly see, or you move on to the next opportunity?
The thing which surprised me personally, before the pandemic, when we moved from the old airport to the new one, because we thought, we have the market, we know we have the market. 20 million people within 2 hours drive, more than 200 million people within two hours flight. And airlines actually said, Istanbul is a hub. That's true. It is a hub, but it was not perceived as a destination. And everyone said, if you fly to Turkey, you fly to Antalya, Izmir, all the nice seaside destinations. So we thought, besides Starlines, everyone else we are speaking to are asking about connectivity in Istanbul while we actually have the market. Istanbul is a bigger version of Lisboa. It's on Seven Hills as well, but obviously, much, much bigger market. So we actually decided, as we are talking with the customers from literally everywhere in the world, we decided to bid for Roots World. That's simply the main reason we decided to bid for Roots World in Istanbul, that we could bring all the decision makers to show them our destination, that Istanbul is actually a destination to change, simply to change the perception.
Joao?
Yeah, I think the straight answer is that we need to insist. But I think it goes beyond that. I think one is the airline that knows you very well. So your home carrier, right? So you talk with them every week, you know them very well, you know the fleet growth, you know what markets they are pitching, you know their short list, so you continue, you try to speed up decisions. Then you have the second layer, which is airlines that are there. So, you know, they can add frequencies, but they know the market, you know, they know Istanbul. So Lufthansa knows Istanbul and others know São Paulo, American knows São Paulo and so on. And then there are the new ones. And I think for the new ones, you are just a point on the map or a city that people know because they know geography, right? They know the basics. But I think knowing a market, as Magis was saying, is not simply saying that Istanbul has X amount of passengers and the traffic is X, Y, and Z. It's to live in the city, is to understand the museums, how the city can be livable, what you do there. And I think that can convince. Because when you go on maps, depending on the assumptions, the market, you can have 10 markets that will be equal in a 5% profitability change. which basically is nothing because we do a lot of assumptions. So I think you need to convince the airlines to visit you to understand the market in more depth than sometimes airlines do, and then insist and go again.
Continuity. One question for everyone. Now, after insisting and insisting, you managed to get the route that you saw clearly with your analysis. Once the route is established and fully operating, how do you make sure, and this is a question for everyone, maybe Frank, you can answer first, how do you make sure that the market is actually a success? How do you partner together?
Basically, the main factor here is monitoring the route, seeing what's going on, and share data with the airports. And of course, the airline have the data, but you have continually to monitorize what's going on in the area.
Veronica, anything to add here? What do you see as key?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything to add there. For me, it's monitoring the routes and making adjustments as necessary is the key factor.
Yeah.
And from the airport perspective, how do you manage that relationship with the airline? I assume it's different if the airline is a hub carrier versus a non-hub carrier.
No, I think it is, but I think maybe worldwide is what I think that overall we need to do better. Because we pitch a lot to bring an airline, but I think the follow-up process that Frank was mentioning, we need to have more trust. We both want the same thing, is that the route continue, it to be a success. So we should be able to divide the data that is, of course, non-proprietary and non-confidential. Because I do not see if the bookings in December are good, but Frank knows. And so if he can raise the alarm and say, you know, we need to do something because I don't see this trend going well, we might be able to do things. But if we wait for December and then the load factor is low 60s, he will tell me now I need either to cancel or to reduce. And I'll say, but why didn't you say anything before? So I think this the trust that we need to build in the market and keep things confidential as confidential. But I think we say that a lot of things are confidential when maybe they are not that much, and that we need to be everyone be responsible. And we have NDAs and we have strong agreements that we need to be share more information between us, because I think that will help airports and airlines at the end.
Ajit?
Yes, of course. I mean, monitor, but trust is very important. I mean, the fact is we are trusted advisors for airlines. I mean, relations is, of course, everything followed by the facts, of course. So when we get a new airline, the important thing is, of course, to sustain them. So Visit Turkey is one of our important stakeholders. We have our own channels as well. So especially the foreign carriers, you can imagine when our home carrier have 75% market share, the home carriers need support. I mean, I can take an example about, I mean, Wizz Air, European low cost, they are the latest one to start, I mean, Istanbul. Obviously, they know what they're doing in London, but they're new to the Turkish market. So, I mean, what can we do? Of course, we have the tourism board. We have our own social media channels. We have our own website, for instance, where we have traffic of 3.5 million people every month. And that's a strong channel, actually, which we can provide to the airline, whether it's airline ABC, to get their footprint into our local market. And of course, the aim is not to just sustain the route, but to develop the route, hopefully with more frequencies or bigger aircrafts.
Adding something to the airports, I think so that it's more in your part, in your responsibility. If you see the data and you're monitoring the routes, probably you are the main one to have to incentive to promote doing some co-share with some route, because you are seeing what's the data of other airlines that we don't know. You know where the passenger came from and where they go. And as I was talking with the other airports a couple of days ago, an incentive to sign virtual interlines probably can help to maintain routes, you know, and so on.
Yeah, to further elaborate on that part, actually, I mean, one of the things which we focus on as well is when a foreign carrier arrives into Istanbul, we facilitate them to speak with our home carrier, obviously. That's one thing. But secondly, look on the total cost of operation. That how can we help the airlines to decrease the total cost of operation in terms of shorter taxi time, dedicated gates? These are the things which are very difficult to measure in terms of how much you can save, but there is a saving. Concerning the incentive part, I agree with you that it's one of the enablers. In Istanbul, we decided to go for a completely different approach. I mean, we don't have any incentive. We got 24 new carriers in during the last 3 years. We had two options, which we discussed. One was have same base charge as our competitors in Europe, Middle East, and then offer 5-year incentive for long-haul carriers, 3 years incentive for short-haul carriers. But what about after these 3 to 5 years? The second option was to have a low flat rate. We decided to go for the low flat rate, which means in my job, for instance, I mean, instead of negotiating the contracts and talking about incentive, we talk about the business. Actually, I mean, there are no right or wrong decisions here, but the thing is that helped us to spend more time with airlines to convince them about our market and focus on decreasing the total cost of operation instead of signing the contracts.
Great.
I believe we are running out of time. This has been a very good conversation. I just would like to ask each one of you to give some final words of advice for everyone on this topic, if you have any.
And no, basically is figure out, go through direct niche, you know, to operate long-haul flights. Taking a look to new aircraft that are coming into the market that can allow you to reduce a lot of cost, and using both passenger and cargo operation, and trying to bring some point to point, as Jao was mentioned, don't have to stop by to go to Cancun, and so on. So if you can build all the stuff looking for launch new routes, probably you're going to be in the right channel.
Veronica?
So these new technology single aisle aircraft, A220, A321LR, A321XLR, these are the tools that are available to be a low risk way of entering long haul markets. And so for the airlines, there's the benefit if you want to explore new business strategies. It's an excellent way of exploring new long-haul markets at low risk. And, of course, for the airports as well, I give the message that you can remind your airlines that that these aircraft are available in order to be able to operate on routes which are very or have a thinner and can't support a wide body service.
Joe?
Yeah, I think two or three last messages. One is that we need to work more closely together, including aircraft manufacturers. For instance, if I want to know exactly what is the range of an A321LR and XLR, not the theoretical one, but the practical one from São Paulo. So this should be an ongoing discussion, right? I need to know exactly with Airbus, Boeing, and the others. So how far I can go with full payload, with not full payload, so that we can include this. We can add also tourism authorities, the other end airports. So we all need to work together. I think working together is today crucial. Second thing that I always say is that don't pitch for something that you don't believe. So sometimes airports approach São Paulo and say, we think that airline A could do São Paulo to the destination X. And I say, okay, but I don't think that the market is mature enough for A, B, and C. So don't pitch everything, because that will reduce your credibility with the airline. So when we go after an airline, they should be very well aware that if São Paulo goes as Guarulhos and say to the airline, come, is that we really trust and believe that this will be a profitable one. And last is that we are all here to make money, either directly as a private company, as Guarulhos, or directly and indirectly, maybe in the case of Istanbul. So we want to bring benefits from someone, the community, the government, the number of tourists, my company, my shareholders. And because we do this, you know, we are always trying to do our best. And we need to see who is winning, and we all need to win. The airport, the airline needs to be profitable. And of course, if there is tourism or economic development, that gain needs to be measured so that the incentives of the official authorities can be also a percentage of what they are gaining by having more connectivity.
Ajit?
Yeah, I would like to mention two or three things as well. I agree concerning the cooperation, especially for long-haul routes. It's really important whatever airline you target, of course, it has to be the realistic one that you work with the airport at the other end as well. So you have obviously a common message, plus you can get a lot of insights from the market from the other end. Secondly, understand the customers. We know from ourselves as well. Of course, we have our favorite carriers, but we have our own favorites, transfer airports as well. So it's really important as airports, that we look on the customer journey, we try to implement products to enhance customer experience. Number three, to be willing to take the risk. To share one example, we have seen what happened last year, at least in Europe, long security queues. It was operationally literally a mess because a lot of airports decided to adjust their operation to COVID-19 norms instead of thinking about what will going to happen in post-pandemic era. COVID would definitely not last forever. So it's really important that you always think two, three steps ahead and simply take the risk.
Very good. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, each one of the panelists, and you for sitting here. I think it was very constructive and a lot of very good information. I see one hand has been raised.
So my question to you, Veronica, is how is at Airbus the planning for developing and delivering more aircrafts dedicated to cargo? Because it's a big issue for cargo capacity, especially for me working for Manaus Airport. It's a big cargo terminal. We need more capacity for cargo.
So cargo aircraft are very important. So we have our cargo aircraft, we have our new build, and then we also have P2F conversion programs as well. So there is plenty of, the capability is building up for the cargo, full cargo aircraft. I'm a passenger aircraft specialist, so I will have to defer to my cargo colleagues for the full full expertise on fully cargo aircraft.
Okay. Yeah, I can help you a little bit if you want in that point. Well, basically, if you allow me, what happened in the market with the cargo right now is that the big challenge is the last mile. It's not the part of the bulk, the wide body. And for that point, only for Airbus, this year, they will deliver 90 A321 Foxtrot that are en route to MROs to build the conversions. That aircraft, it will take the market. It's more cost effective in terms of capacity and payload that the Boeing 737-800 allowed, like 3,500 kilo more than the Boeing. The Airbus allowed a little bit more, and it's level up now the market of the cargo, because many people jump to cargo side and everything is getting the normal level. The time of utilization of the aircraft and cargo is getting reduced significantly right now in this region. And basically, for Airbus, is taking the advantage of the market.
Any other final question?
Hi, everyone. Pamela from Santo Domingo Airports. And I have a question for Mr. Joao. You mentioned something really interesting. That was about the invisible competitors. And I would like to, please, if you can elaborate a little more about the invisible competitors, and also as an airport, as they are invisible, might be hard to see it on plain sight. So in your experience, what have you done in the past to try to identify them, but also what can tourism competencies and government do to the airport stay relevant against these invisible competitors? Thank you.
No, thank you. It's a very good question. I think we can talk about two layers of competition here. So one is as a country. So Brazil or Dominican Republic, you want to get tourists, right? Inbound tourism. So what are your competitors? What are the competitors for Brazil? So when Europeans decide to go on holidays, what are the competitors to Brazil? Those competitors can be in Indonesia. They can be in Australia. So they can be anywhere in the world. So it's not obvious that it will be Argentina or South Africa or Chile. So the competitors be right on the other side of the world. And yes, I'm competing with the same pool for the same pool of tourists. And the same applies to, of course, here, right? So you need to identify what are the type of markets that are complement you in terms of the same appealing. So for instance, the Northeast Brazil might be competing with the Caribbean, but also with Cabo Verde and with other places. So very different geographically speaking, but they compete for the same pool of people that enjoy sunny destinations. So this is one layer of competition. It's invisible because the airports typically, they don't do this type of benchmarks. And the second one is a competition for the assets of the carriers, right? So let's say that I'm pitching for a NORS operation, right? So NORS has a few wide bodies. We all agree that they can put them anywhere in the world. Why São Paulo? Why not Jakarta? Why not Cape Town? I'm not competing with Rio. That I could pitch easily. Why Rio, yes or no? Maybe for NORS is better Rio or Buenos Aires. That's fair enough. But it can be all over the world. And this is very hard because when you go to the headquarters, actually you are competing with someone that might be miles away, but the asset is only one, is their aircraft that will be delivered in Q4. And they need to decide now what they are going to do with the aircraft. So that's why I think that when we talk with carriers that they have no relationship with a country, they can actually be thinking on 20 different routes that are in 20 different jurisdictions with 20 different business models that are completely different. And that's the approach that we need to do is again, very unique. So I think I was thinking about those two layers of invisible competition.
Thank you very much. Please, again, thank you for everyone joining today. It was very constructive and have a great afternoon.
Thanks.